favorite scary movie. Have you checked the children?
It's all for you!
It was kind of a funny moment, but I felt bad for the dude.
I think better news, better or worse news than, you know, a loved one's head in a box.
They're on the same plane, I would say.
Well, yeah. 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 Was that a segue? I think that was a good segue.
I think that was good.
Okay.
Yeah, that was nice. Yeah.
Shall we? Let's do this.
Please, yeah. Let's.
I'm with it.
I completely misspelled the episode title in the recording. I spelled 7, S-E, the number 7, V-E-N.
Oh. That happened to me multiple times while writing this this outline for this episode.
Seven.
Yep.
Oh, and you can bet that's going to happen to me when doing the art for this shit. Don't worry.
Oh, no, don't do that. That's for the people.
Oh, yeah.
All right, guys, are you ready to get started?
Let's do this.
Excellent.
There it is.
It's okay. It's a seltzer.
I'm going to pop my protein shake. There it is. I don't know if you guys heard that.
I did.
Good old high quality H2O for me, and that thing has already been sipped.
Let's go ahead and get started. Welcome back, guys, to another episode of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster. Joining us, returning from the great beyond, Anthony Fuentes.
Hey, hey, hey.
And Phil Acevedo.
Hello. It's
I
good
missed
to be back.
You guys.
Dude, I was out for, what, 2 episodes,
yeah.
I think? Yeah. You too, Fuente, right? Or just one?
No, he was
just
on
one. Just one.
Yeah. Yeah, I missed out on the last 2 episodes, man. October has been fucking busy.
Yeah. The boys are back. Town.
The boys are back in town.
Yes.
Okay. Boys back in town.
Quick gripe. A Knight's Tale has been on Paramount Plus for the last, I don't know, 6 months, and I've been wanting to watch it so fucking bad. And I don't have Paramount Plus. It's the one streaming service.
Wait, didn't we have Paramount Plus for a little bit?
We did, but then no one used it, so I deactivated it.
Oh, fuck, I was using it, but then I guess I didn't notice you deactivated it, so maybe not as much as I thought I did.
Not as much as you thought, because that was months ago.
All right, well, fuck
streaming services, what's that?
Shut up, Phil. All right. Phil, what are we talking about today? You wrote
today, this. Yes. Oh, my God, it gives me an incredible pleasure in many ways, in a gluttonous way.
Oh, my God.
In a prideful way, in a wrathful way, to present to you guys this outline, this episode. We're talking about the 1995 Grand Slam David Fincher classic known as Seven, or Seven, and if you're nasty. Seven, if you're nasty.
Look at a monologue in there, taking up all the screen time. How greedy.
Oh. good stuff.
Crazy.
Good stuff.
All of these sections are for Phil. That's weird.
Some of them, yeah. Some of them. Yeah, but yeah, we're talking about Seven. This is one of my favorite, like, noir films, crime thriller, horror, psychological horror-ish, whatever you want to call it, of all time. Mm. So I'm very, very excited to present this and, like, talk about this with y'all and engage with our listeners with this because, fuck, dude, to me, this is like a monumental film right here.
Yeah, this movie
absolutely.
Incredible.
Yeah.
I'm so glad we finally are covering it because what other David Fincher film have we covered? Did we do Zodiac?
No. We did, what did we cover? Fuck.
Yeah, because we did another one of his movies. I just don't remember which one, because I thought it was Zodiac, but...
I don't think I was there for this one.
You weren't.
No, wasn't
it? You guys have covered
a
Fincher film?
I don't know, because Sasha was on it. We talked about Fincher. What was
it? No, it wasn't. She wasn't on it. She was on for, Sinister.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay. No, okay. I gaslit myself. I was like, we've covered a David Fincher movie before.
No,
so this is the first
we
one.
Haven't. This
no,
is the
this
first
is
one.
The first one.
All right.
There you go, Phil.
Very
all
cool.
Right.
Very
you get
cool.
Fincher, bro.
All right. I just got Finchered.
Stop it.
In the butt talks. There, I said it. I said it. I said it. There, it's out there. It's out there now.
With the knife strap on? Or?
Oh, God. Now you're just taking it to that level, dude.
Okay. You started it. I finished it.
the worst thing to talk about for a movie with Kevin Spacey, but please, let's move on.
I know, right?
Okay, so Ruben and I were just finishing watching it before we recorded. I had, like, the last, you know, hour. And he was just, like, the second Kevin Spacey showed up, we both were just like, you were so good! And you fucked it up!
you were the chosen one!
No, literally, that is us about Kevin Spacey. I fucking loved Kevin Spacey.
I know.
And then he just was a fucking...
Yeah, apparently he's working on a comeback.
I don't know how successful that's going to be.
Yeah, but say, I don't know about the success on that one at all. Yeah, not at all.
You know,
yeah. We'll see.
You know, current day and age, it's not really in vogue to be a pedophile, but...
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, well, anyways, IMDb synopsis?
Speaking of sins, yes.
Shall we? Webster, why don't you start us off with an IMDb synopsis for S-S-S-7, dude?
S-7. It would be my pleasure. Two detectives, a rookie and a veteran, hunt a serial killer who uses the seven deadly sins as his motives. Pretty cut and dry.
Yeah, pretty cut and dry, dude. Right there to the point, I would say.
The beginning, like two detectives, a rookie and a veteran. It just, it gave me like Romeo and Juliet vibes. Two houses, both alike and dignity.
Yeah. this IMDb synopsis just reminds me of like, somebody's like, quick, just tell me what this movie's about and I'll watch it. Just, all right, you got 5 seconds. Two detectives, a rookie and a veteran, hunter, serial killer, who uses seven deadly sins as his motives. Boom.
Done. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. This
I
film,
like it.
Yeah. I'll watch it. It is, yeah. This film released on September 22nd, 1995. The glorious year of 1995.
So when you were born?
It was when I was born. It was. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was 3 months old when this movie came out.
Wow.
God damn.
It was written by Andrew Walker and, of course, directed, as previously mentioned, by the great David Fincher. This movie is starring Brad Pitt, Morgan Freeman, Gwyneth Paltrow, and the aforementioned disgraced Kevin Spacey.
Damn, what a cast. Holy
yeah,
shit.
This, oh God, I also, that's the other thing I commented on. I was like, I miss when Gwyneth Paltrow, like, actually acted.
Yes.
Instead of, like, selling vagina eggs.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what she's doing these days. I heard she's kind of like a weirdo herself too these days. But
she's kind of become like a bit of a what's the word I'm looking for?
Like a wellness guru.
Yeah, like a wellness guru. Like she has her own line, and it's all just like she's the one who like a couple years ago made like vagina scented candles.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a whole thing. It was an interesting day to be on Twitter, to say the least. Anyway. The budget for this movie was $34 million, and the box office earnings was a whopping $327.3 million.
That'll get you a lot of vagina-scented candles right there.
I don't want them.
Yeah. I'm just saying, that's a good sum to pick up a few.
At least a few.
Yeah, at least a few, you know? At those Paltrow prices, please.
I hate this. Please stop.
Anyways, I'll go ahead and kick this one off
real
quick. Let's see, because greed will imprison us all. And, of course, I hate that fortune cookie shit. Now, we're going to do a play-by-play, clearly.
You know where that's from, right? Flynn?
I hate that fortune cookie shit?
Yeah,
that's from. Oh, my God, I said it totally wrong. It's Rush Hour 2.
Yes. All right. Yes. I was like, I just wasn't. I wanted to give you that line because I was like, all right.
I was gonna guess Rush Hour, so you guys are having. Yeah.
I should have did my fucking what was his name? Stephen Rain fucking voice.
Yeah,
right there.
And then Ricky Tan. Ricky Tan. Fortune cookie shit.
That's a good. Nice little segue there. All right. Yeah. Anyways, the story begins in an unnamed city filled with violent crime and corruption. Gotham. This place.
Okay, thank you. Oh my God. Thank you for saying that. Okay, please.
I didn't read the next line. Phil predicted it also. This place is pretty much Gotham City. Fantastic. We all share the same brain. Now, we follow Detective William Somerset at a crime scene. Somerset is 1 week away from retirement. Oh, God damn it. And, of course, played by Morgan Freeman.
He's too damn old for this shit.
He really is. That's Mr. Glover, but still, he is also too old for this shit.
Oh, no, I know. I've seen freaking the movie that it's from. But, I just say that for any old detective.
Any old
Webster,
one...
you've seen Lethal Weapon?
Yes, I've seen Lethal Weapon.
What?
Dude, I wrote a paper about it in college.
Hell yeah, dude.
Yeah, she compared Lethal Weapon with Seven.
I'm a little shocked here.
Different takes on crime solving.
Yeah, we were talking, we had a whole section in one of my feminist film classes about buddy cop movies.
Oh, that's so funny. I love that.
It's so funny we're talking about Lethal Weapon. That name of the title, it will be brought up later on in this.
Funny we're talking about Lethal Weapon.
And it's so funny we're talking about Gotham City, too. So, yeah, we'll just wait until the end, dude.
Good communal thinking, brain. Wow. Communal brain thinking.
Mm-hmm. Ugh. So, anyway, Somerset is partnered with his replacement, Detective David Mills, a young and short-tempered rookie who just relocated to the city with his wife, Tracy, and that is, of course, Brad Pitt and aforementioned scented vagina saleswoman, vagina egg, Gwyneth Paltrow.
Vagina candles.
Tracy, she brought her vagina smelling candles to the new apartment in this unnamed city.
I hate both of you. I regret imparting this information.
You can't smell through the screen, but it does add an ambiance, you know?
Yeah. Anyways. Just because some of us can go directly to the source doesn't mean that you guys have to keep bringing it up.
Alex is like canceling those candle orders right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're good Christmas gifts, you fuckers.
Oh my god.
I would accept it. I'm kind of curious on these candles we keep talking about.
What Gwyneth Paltrow's pussy smells like?
Oh, jeez.
The Paltrow pussy. It's based off of her specific vagina smell.
Okay, so you know, the more details, this is actually fucking weird.
Yeah, it just raises my curiosity. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, fucking weird. Yeah, fucking weird. Of course. Yeah, fucking weird.
Cool. But like, hers, huh?
Is this like, are we talking about like Pepper Potts Gwyneth or like, you know, Shakespeare in Love Gwyneth? No.
Damn it. Yeah, like,
we're spending way too much time.
We're spending a lot of time.
Scented candles here. You guys. You did this, not me.
Nah, dude. It was you. I didn't know shit about this until you brought it up.
I said it once as a funny joke, and you guys kept bringing it up.
Honestly, it's new information that intrigues us greatly, but also it is good to be back.
Oh, yeah. It feels great to be back.
We're back, baby.
All right. So on Monday, Somerset and Mills investigates an obese man who was forced to eat until his stomach burst. That was a horrifying fucking scene. The two detectives discover the word gluttony written on the wall. And, surprisingly decent handwriting. Somerset is rejected. He's like, oh, good penmanship. He's rejected this, rejecting this case and request to be reassigned. His request is denied, and he is stuck working with Mills on this case, who Mills is super like gung ho about this shit, like I'll fucking take it, and
he's
then
like, I'm all just, over it.
Yeah, and then Somerset, it's like, dude, this should not be your first case. Just trust me, this is some shit.
Yeah, he reminded me of Will Smith in Men in Black. I don't want anyone calling me kid or sport or junior.
Oh my god, what a good fucking analogy.
That's good.
Oh, that's please. Good. Let's replace the lead actors from both in these films.
Oh my god.
Agent J and Agent K. There ain't nothing extraterrestrial about this. K's like, hold on a second.
Kevin Spacey's a fucking alien.
Oh my god, he absolutely. Kevin Spacey would be fucking Zed for sure.
That'd be hilarious. Oh, what if Will Smith's like wife's head is in the box? Like, hey, Kay, man, you gotta tell me what's in that box, man. I'm not down for all this, man. You gotta tell me what's in that box,
kid. I think you should step back for a second, okay?
Put down the gun, kid.
Take off the glasses. No, you can look at the box, but you're going to have to take off the glasses and turn around really quickly. And look right here.
Let me tell you something, kid. This is not 100% legal, all right?
Neuralizes
this is John Doe we're messing with.
He neuralizes it. Hey, so actually, you forgot everything about your wife. This head.
There's just a random lady's head in a box. It's crazy. Yeah,
exactly. And you can do a really good job solving this case. Okay, that's a weird word segue weird. There we did with that one. That's good. See, classic improvising. Anyways.
Yeah, see?
The following day, another murder is committed. The victim was forced to cut a pound of flesh off of his body. The detectives find the word greed written on the floor. As Somerset and Mills gather more information, clues lead them to the sloth victim, who was forced to remain handcuffed to his bed for a year. Filled with all types of drugs in his body, this scene scared the shit out of me.
Yeah.
Oh, that one
Oh boy, that one. Mm-hmm. He's like, too much Call of Duty, bro. Sorry, time to fucking. You don't want to get out? Man. Fine. Anyways, these murders lead Somerset to believe that these killings are based on the Christian concept of the seven deadly sins.
Cannot believe it took them this long.
I know, they're like,
I love the montage of Somerset in the library just doing research with like beautiful classical music. The security guard's like, how's this for culture? And he raises up the volume, and it's like, I don't know what it is. Like, Beethoven? I have no idea. I have no fucking idea. But it's, I thought it was really cool. Like, nice little fadeaway transitions while the security guards are playing cards up in the balcony. Really, I don't know. There's something very soothing about that scene. That's probably, like, the most peaceful scene that you'll have in this movie.
Yes. Yeah, it really got kind of artsy, like, a little aside for a bit. I think that was when I was just like, oh, Fincher knows how to shoot a film, like, just beautifully, like, aesthetically, just oof.
And this was his second movie, right?
Yeah, this is his second movie. But he's come from, like, we'll talk about Fincher's career in just a little bit, but that dude's, like, shot a shit ton of music videos and commercials. And
never mind. We'll talk about it later.
Yep, exactly. But in the meantime, I think it's my turn here. Well, this title goes like this: Lust for Wine and Strap-ons. Okay, so sure, dude. Tracy invites. Oh, you know what? Can I just divert here for a second? Please. All right. I don't know who was it. Somebody in our inner circle. I don't know. I don't remember who, but somebody sent me an Instagram meme of bat signal butt plugs.
What?
Like, it's an actual butt plug. You push the button and a bat signal lights up the wall.
That's so fucking funny.
I just post the gif of the shut up and take my money, that dude. Yeah. Yeah. But anyways,
it's an Amazon wishlist. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. This is former sex educator and used to work at a sex shop. Never buy a sex toy off of Amazon. I'm begging you. Anyway.
Oh.
Oh, all right. Okay. All right. Well, that's
most of the time.
Fuen is literally saying right now, "Well, too late for that, huh?"
Too bad. No, they're just.
I got lust written on the bedhead right now. It's
on. Oh god. Oh god.
No, usually they just aren't body safe, which is a problem.
Okay.
Ouch. Kibble.
Right there. Mm-hmm. Uh huh.
Sounds itchy.
Yeah. It should sound itchy.
All right. Let's continue here, please. All right. I diverted for a second, not 2 minutes. Okay, let's do this. Tracy invites Somerset to join her and Mills for a nice cozy dinner at their new apartment. After dinner, the two detectives continue their investigation in the living room. And this, fun fact, is literally my favorite scene of the entire fucking movie. It's like, blink and you miss. All right, Phil's favorite scene from this whole movie is here in the living room. When Morgan Freeman asks for a glass of wine when he's offered a beer. Later, when the apartment shakes, you know, due to the nearby subway, as we saw like earlier during the dinner scene, he lifts up his wine from spilling and is shocked to see that this glass of wine, quote unquote, is actually a full pint glass of wine that Mills gave him. And then he stops for like a second and he looks at the glass of wine. He's like, this motherfucker poured me a shit ton of wine. He treated this like if it's beer. Mm-hmm. And like he filled a glass of beer but with wine, and it's like a beer glass, not a wine glass. And it's like, this just confirms how unsophisticated and uncultured Mills really is. He's a barbarian, freaking Mills, dude. Mm-hmm. This guy jumps into his apartment and starts wrestling with his dogs.
That was so funny.
And
go.
Yeah, if you never spotted this scene before, please do yourself a favor and watch the scene. And it's like the most, and it's so comedic. Probably the only comedic moment you'll find in this movie.
That's so true. I did like catch it, and I thought it was super funny. I'm so glad you brought it up.
Oh, that's good. Little character moments like that. Yeah,
it is.
Good direction.
I looked it up like, I don't know, a while back. I watch this movie pretty often. I don't know, maybe once a year, give or take. And I remember going on Reddit, and I'm like, am I the only one who this has got to be an iconic moment, right, in this movie? And like, there's like a whole Reddit thread of like Morgan Freeman looking into the wine glass, and it's pretty funny.
That's awesome.
It is, yeah. It's probably my favorite. It's like. literally like a half a second moment. It's, I don't know. For some reason, I just fucking love that scene right there so much. But anyways, on Friday, Tracy meets privately with Somerset. She explains to him how unhappy she is with moving to the city. And she even reveals to Somerset that she is pregnant and doesn't believe this city is the right place to raise a child. So this is where Somerset tells Tracy a love story, a story of how he was once in a similar situation with a former partner, Somers, like a romantic partner, not, you know, police partner. I should have clarified that. Somerset advises Tracy to tell David about the pregnancy only if she decides to keep the baby. But yeah. So later on, after lots of research and even some illegal plays, both Somerset and Mills, the two detectives find themselves at John Doe's apartment. They just named this guy John Doe, the killer. You know, they don't know what else to call him. So this is John Doe.
No, he names himself that.
Does he? Mm-hmm. I don't remember
that. So basically in the movie, when Somerset gets like the list of people, like basically like he was like, oh yeah, the FBI puts you on a list if you check out like books about whatever. And the guy's literal library card is Jonathan Doe.
That's right. That's right. That is totally right. Yeah. To John Doe's surprise, John Doe returns home and opens fire on both detectives. Like, he's like, oh, shit, these guys are in my apartment. Oh, fuck. So he just opens fires. And this is where Mills and Somerset pursue John Doe on foot. And John Doe ultimately strikes Mills in the head with a tire iron, knocking him to the ground. And John Doe had a chance to kill Mills, but lets him go as he flees the scene.
So fucking good.
And later on, the detectives and a team of police officers investigate John Doe's apartment. The apartment is filled with stashed money, photographs, and an endless amount of notebooks and journals and diary entries and a whole bunch of shit inside this thing. It'll literally take like months to cover everything. At John Doe's apartment, however, the detectives get a phone call from none other than John Doe himself. Doe tells Mills how much he, quote-unquote, admires him.
I love a good creepy phone call in a thriller like this. So good.
On Saturday, Somerset and Mills discover the lust victim to be a sex worker who was raped and murdered with a custom-made blade strap-on used by a man held at gunpoint. Holy shit, dude. And, like, they reveal the photo of this, like, custom-made blade strap-on. Holy shit. My God.
Looks gnarly.
And then looks gnarly. Yeah, and then the scene where the dude's being investigated, like, he's just like, oh, my God. He's, like, shaking in trauma. Like, yeah, dude.
That's fucking insane. Guy, he didn't do anything wrong. Like... I also noted that this movie came out in 95. This movie was filmed either congruently or shortly after the brothel owner is Michael Massey, the guy who shot Brandon Lee in The Crow. And so I like these had to have been filmed either like congruently or shortly thereafter, which I was just like, oh my God.
Damn. I'm gonna say shortly thereafter. Wait. This place was owned by the actor that shot Brandon Lee.
Yeah. So the actor, remember in the movie when they interviewed the
fun boy,
the victim. Yeah, it's fun boy. Uh-huh. But the owner of the brothel they interview is the guy who plays fun boy in The Crow, and that came out in 94. This came out in 95. So I was saying they either had to have been filmed congruently or like back to back.
Holy shit, damn, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating. Yeah. Holy shit.
Yeah. Interesting. Mm-hmm. So, on Saturday, Somerset and Mills I already said that. Oh, hey, we already said this. Hey, Alex, it's your turn, buddy.
Well, guys, I just have one question for you.
What is it?
What's in the box?
What's in the fucking box?
What's in the fucking box?
What's in the box?
It's the Jack in the Box 4-piece munchie combo, actually. Welcome. Man. It's Glutton Part 2.
Give me a chicken tater. The iconic line. Anyway.
Spicy cluck. Let's go.
No. Yeah. The following day, the pride victim is revealed to be a model who John Doe disfigured facially. Unable to live without her beauty, the woman commits suicide. This is so fucked up. It was such a creative kill. It was incredible.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Later, Somerset and Mills return to the police station where John Doe arrives, covered in blood. Also, incredible shot. John Doe surrenders and threatens to plead insanity at his trial unless Mills and Somerset escort him to an undisclosed location where they will find the envy and wrath victims.
Damn.
Who could they be? During the drive, John Doe tells Mills and Somerset that he believes that God has chosen him to send a message to society about the idea of what sin is. John Doe leads the two detectives to the remote location that is far outside the city limits, and suddenly a delivery van approaches. Somerset leaves the two to meet with the delivery man and intercepts a package that was delivered to Mills at the remote location. Somerset makes the decision to open the package, not waiting for a bomb squad, which is a lot. Somerset is horrified by what's in the box, and Mills is holding John Doe at gunpoint all the while, and Somerset attempts to make Mills put his gun down to the, for whatever elusive reason, whatever was in the box, we just don't know. Mills demands Somerset to tell him what's in the box.
What's in the box?
Hey, dude, I need you to tell me what's in the box, please. Come on, you can tell me.
What's in the box?
Can you imagine other actors portraying this? Oof. What if it's Christopher Walken as Mills? Hey, Somerset, you gotta tell me what's in the box, baby. Or what about Denzel? What about Denzel?
Now
you listen to me right here, Somerset. You gotta tell me what's in that box right now, all right? Otherwise, I'm gonna lose my fucking shit. Or what about let's see,
T.J. Miller,
Pacino, T.J. Miller. Oh God. What about Ryan Reynolds?
Hey, dude, what's in the box?
You gotta tell me what's in the box, all right? Because I can tell you what's in it, but I'm not gonna tell you what. I don't know, dude.
Ryan Reynolds was a little fucking Marky Mark. It was a little Marky Mark right there.
Or Mark Wahlberg. Oh, man. I'm done with the impressions. Yeah. I'm sorry. But yeah, we're having fun here.
This door, my friend.
Yes, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I'm sorry.
Mills demands.
Now listen to me, Somerset.
Oh my God.
You gotta tell me what's in the box, all right? It could be a lot. It could be illegal aliens, for all we know.
Somerset,
look at me right now and just tell me what's in the box. Come on, you can tell me what's in the box.
Is it ballots for me?
Ballots. Come on, you gotta do it.
They're only legitimate votes if they're votes for me.
Is it? What's in the box? Is it the cats and the dogs that Kamala's eating? Is that what's going on here?
I will Venmo you $5 to stop right now.
John Doe, he's eating the dogs. He's eating the cats.
He just passed up a free $5.
Oh my gosh.
Now, Somerset, when I was a child, an attorney at law, the border was safe, but you have to tell me what's in the box now, darling. That was my attempt at Kamala.
That was Kamala. That was pretty bad, Kamala. But I'm going to tell you right now.
I can't do a Kamala.
I 100% know what's in the box. It is a whole case of those Gwyneth Paltrow vagina scented eggs. 100%. That's.
Yep. There you go, dude. That's what's in the box.
I can almost guarantee.
Full circle moment.
Yeah, I can almost guarantee that when the vagina candle thing happened, people like Photoshop that or like made that.
They had to.
That's hilarious.
Absolutely.
Oh my God.
In research for this episode, I was looking around to see if there was ever like a prop of like, I don't know, like a fake Gwyneth Paltrow head in the box. There was nothing. Literally, like, I couldn't find anything. I was like, was there like a prop that they used? Like, you know, maybe a dummy that kind of with blonde hair or something?
I'm so glad you brought this up because I'm so mad that we don't see Gwyneth Paltrow's head in the box. I actually,
when I was a kid, I wanted to see it. As an adult, I'm kind of glad it was never shown. What do you guys think?
I think it was the right creative decision. My morbid curiosity, like, I'm sure is more fucked up than whatever they could have done or what they would have done. So I think it's that, like, the scariest thing is, a room that you can't see into or whatever Stephen King said.
Mm-hmm.
Your own mind just comes up with possibilities, and none of them are good.
Yeah. No, definitely not. I actually would say up until this most recent screening, I was in the same boat, but then part of me wanted a Hereditary style cutaway. Like, part of me really wanted that. And I was like, maybe. But, like, you know, obviously that really hadn't been done. Sure. So, you know, it still works, I think, 100% as it is. But part of me would like to see that particular Ari Aster cut right there.
Ari Aster 7? Yeah, oh, my
God. When I was a teenage edgelord, yeah, I'd be like, what the fuck? Why don't you show what's in the box, dude? Like, why don't you show the head? Now it's like, nah.
Well, now that totally you're a dignified film, bro.
Sure, dude. I'm like, yeah, I'm kind of glad they didn't. They never showed. I like it. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, let's continue, please.
Yeah.
We die. My bad.
I'm sorry. You got distracted by impersonating one Donald Trump. Mills demands Somerset to tell him what's in the box, while John Doe reveals to Mills that Doe is envy because he envies Mills and his life with Tracy. John Doe urges Mills to become Wrath as he tells Mills Tracy's head is in the box and that Tracy begged for her life and the life of her unborn child. This is diabolical. This is, like, absolutely off the wall. Somerset pleads Mills to let go of the gun and that if he kills John Doe, he'll win. Mills, distraught and completely fucking enraged, shoots John Doe dead, completing his evil plan all along. And it cuts away, and the film ends with Mills being driven away by the police with a Morgan Freeman voiceover saying, Ernest Hemingway once said, "The world is a fine place and worth fighting for. I agree with the second part."
That's a good way to
try it. Can I try it? Let me try this one.
Oh, no.
Ernest Hemingway once said, "The world is a fine place and a worth fighting for. I agree with the second part."
It got better towards the end.
It did.
In the beginning, all right, I tried.
In the beginning, it was like, oh my God. It was like the Twilight Zone. I need water after that. Yeah. It sounded kind of Twilight Zone-y in the beginning.
Oh, you're entering a dimension, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Oh, Morgan Freeman would have been a great voice.
Oh, that would have been cool. That would have been awesome. Best Morgan Freeman role. Let's hear it.
The President in Deep Impact.
Shit. Let's see. Damn.
Shawshank Redemption.
This is a good one. Damn it. That was going to be my answer. That or God and Bruce Almighty?
That's a true
one.
Okay,
that's a classic, yeah.
And Lucius Fox. He's a great Lucius Fox.
He's a great Lucius Fox, dude.
Yeah. I like how our answers all fit our personalities very well.
Absolutely.
Oh, boy.
Fwenster.
Oh, I got this.
That's it. That's it for the plot breakdown, dudes. Fwen, give us a little inside scoop on the production for S7.
S7's production, since the cool titles stop here, but it's all good. It's all good, baby. We're going to talk about the production. Now, screenwriter Andrew Walker found the idea for S7 in the 80s when he moved from the suburbs in Pennsylvania to, do it, Phil,
New York City.
That's right. Walker came to a serious case of culture shock living in the city and seeing a lot of crime and drug abuse. That is like going from Riverside to Los Angeles. That's true. That's a very, very similar. No, a lot of drugs in Riverside, too.
I was going to say.
Yeah, I was like, that's not really. I mean, I recently made that move, and I'm like, all right, for sure.
Yeah.
same old.
I was going to say, did you feel at home?
Good point. I mean, but from, like, Pennsylvania, I've never been to Pennsylvania. I've never been in New York City. But I would probably say, I mean, the suburbs, I mean, for him to have that level of culture shock, he'd probably be like, oh my God, black people, crack, Puerto Ricans, oh God.
I mean, to be fair, like,
there's bodegas everywhere.
New York in the 80s was, like, the murder capital of the United States.
Oh, hell yeah.
So That's true. Some sense, like, I don't think it's like versus now. Like, I'm going to Philadelphia, or I'm going to Pennsylvania for the first time this weekend, but I don't know. Nice. I'll compare and contrast when I go from Pennsylvania to New York City.
Then we'll see there Alex's screenplay afterwards. Eight. Yeah. That's gonna be.
Yeah.
No, because 7, 8, 9.
My name is Alex Webster, and I got a lot of culture shock by going to New York City, and I can't do an Alex Webster impression.
I don't sound like that.
What the fuck is that?
I have no. That was my attempt.
So might as well done Morgan Freeman again, dude.
Like, so Pennsylvania. I can't do
what
it.
What the
anyways.
Fuck? Do you listen?
Is my first attempt. This is my first attempt at an Alex Webster. Can I please get some slack here?
Have you ever listened to me speak ever?
Damn.
Have you
dude.
Ever listened to me speak ever? All right.
Nailed
there you
it.
Go.
Nailed it.
Thank you. Thank you. See, I just did right now, Webster.
See, there you go. See, he just needed to do it in a mocking tone. That's it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like my vocal fry doesn't sound
there you
like
go.
That.
Yeah. There you go. See?
There you go. Yeah. Well,
anyways,
now,
continue.
Back to the this. Walker developed a script for 7 in the early 90s and went to work in getting his script to the right pair of eyeballs. Now, Walker's script was optioned at by Penta Film and hired director Jeremiah Chechik to bring the script to life. Cha-ching. Anyways, both Penta and Chechik made heavy script changes, like removing the bleak ending and having Walker come up with a more mainstream ending. The ending had John Doe kill Mills before getting shot down by Somerset. Also, Tracy gets to keep her head and leave the city at the end of the film. Boo.
That is a much happier ending.
Oh my gosh.
I also think that like, would coincides with the script better, because there's this whole scene that, Somerset and Mills are talking about having never shot anyone before at one point, so I think that would have been an interesting choice.
Yeah.
Not saying it was the right choice, but I'm just I can see how that through line would have gone through the movie.
Yeah, the logic is there, but the actual it's better original for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the script's option was expiring as Penta was having financial issues in getting the movie greenlit. They had no choice but to let go of 7 to New Line Cinema. Chechik also left the project after New Line's acquisition. So it's like, oh, they're going to fucking remove the head. I'm done. No.
Yeah.
Now, New Line and producer Arnold Copelson looked at directors Phil, how do you say this, Juntao. There you go. And
sure.
Guillermo del Toro.
God damn it. I just came up with the dumbest joke. It was like,
What is it?
Don't you know?
Oh.
It's option to New Line Cinema now, don't you know?
No,
oh,
to
there
Phil
you go. To Phil Janot. that's up there with your Don't Stop That Dun-Dun last week. That really, in my car, I was losing my shit. Or Don't Drop That Dun-Dun. I was really
listen to the Hell House LLC Origins, the Carmichael Manor, for more on that.
Oh, terrible title.
No, it's not good.
So bad.
It's
so
such
bad.
A good movie, though.
Good movie, though. I agree. Yeah. I was really prepared to talk about it, but yes. At the time, David Fincher was known for directing music videos for Madonna and Michael Jackson and commercials for Nike. His only film he had under his belt was Alien 3, to which he said was a terrible, terrible experience. Infamously terrible. Yeah, pretty bad. Now, after his experience with Alien 3, Fincher went on record and said, "I'd rather die of colon cancer than make another movie."
Holy shit.
That's pretty extreme.
That's super extreme. What the fuck? That's so specific, too.
Gwyneth Paltrow was like, I have something for that.
Have you guys seen Alien 3?
No.
Yeah.
It's probably like my least favorite one out of all of them, dude.
I like it more than Resurrection, I think I would say.
I haven't seen Resurrection forever. I mean, I don't know if you want to count the Alien vs. Predator movies, but Alien 3, I don't know, man. I know it's a Fincher flick, but it's not, I don't like it at all, dude.
It's a little weird.
Yeah.
I remember the promos for it as a kid. Like,
me too.
A lot.
I do.
Like, a lot, actually. Yeah.
I mean, spoiler alert for Alien 3, but, like, doesn't Ripley die?
She dies in, like, all of them.
Yeah, she dies in pretty much all of them.
Yeah, she'd be dying.
Yeah, she dies. Yeah, she fell into the pit, into the...
That was actually a pretty iconic scene, though, too, I would say. Yeah. I always liked that one. Her fall into the pit.
But then again, she comes right back in Alien Resurrection, which is Alien Resurrection.
Interesting. Yeah, I haven't seen. I've seen Alien and Aliens. I haven't seen any of the other ones.
Yeah, Alien 3 is not good. It is not.
it is not good.
I mean, watch it for yourself, you know. But Fincher went on record. Fuen said, it's infamously known that he fucking hated working on that movie.
Noted. Yeah, it's one of those real clusterfuck productions for sure.
Mm-hmm. You know what's so cool though is the dog aliens that they use in that movie. They were actual real dogs. They just put like xenomorph makeup on them. It's so fucking cool.
That's funny.
Yeah, they definitely have that movement down. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But of course, despite Fincher rejecting the idea of directing feature films again, his agent presented him with the script to Chevron. And David Fincher was absolutely in love with the script, saying, quote, "I found myself getting more and more trapped in this kind of evil, and even though I felt uncomfortable about being there, I had to keep going." Yeah. Nice. So Fincher expressed his interest in the script to New Line. However, New Line realized that Fincher was reading the original script and not the updated script where Tracy survives. Fincher made it clear to the studio that he only wants to direct the original script and wants creative control of the picture. God damn for making a flop alien movie after that. Okay.
Also, God bless the freaking like assistant who fucked up and sent him the wrong version.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, seriously. I thought that was a really interesting bit. He pretty much was like, "Nah, fuck that, dude. I don't want the mainstream one. I want the original script." Yeah, let's do that one.
And she's like, "Did I send the? Was it pile A or pile B?" It'd be fine.
Yeah.
When it came to casting, though, Fincher went with Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman, despite the studio's concern of having another black-white detective duo like Lethal Weapon.
Hey, back at it.
How about we make one of Asian? Give us a couple years. The studio was originally looking at Gene Hackman and Al Pacino for the role of Somerset, but Fincher said nah and went with Morgan Freeman. Good choice. Gene Hackman, no. Al Pacino, maybe.
I don't know, dude. I could kind of see Gene Hackman in this role, dude. Gene Hackman would have been pretty cool.
Somerset. Maybe you're right. Now that I think about it a little bit, Pacino.
Al Pacino. Yeah, I know. Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe Al Pacino now? Maybe? An 80-year-old Al Pacino for Somerset? I don't know.
That's a good point, because he was... Yeah. I mean, he was getting into that...
He was in Heat at this time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
He was already a police detective, but he was, like, I don't know, middle-aged and stuff like that. I think he'd be, like, a little younger for Somerset.
Maybe, because he had Devil's Advocate and Any Given Sunday around the same time, right? Or no? Or was that a little later?
Any Given Sunday was a little later, but Devil's Advocate, I think, was for sure mid-90s, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, 96, 97?
Yeah. Man, why did my parents take me to see that fucking movie? Jesus Christ.
They took you to go see Devil's Advocate?
In theaters.
That's awesome.
I know.
I do remember, I didn't see that movie until, like, later in life, like, teenagehood or something.
Yeah, no, they were super, again, this is fucking babysitting. They're just like, yeah, the kids will be fine. Yeah. Anyways, actress Christina Applegate rejected the part of Tracy, and Robin Wright auditioned. Ultimately, the part for Tracy went to Gwyneth Paltrow. Will not reference the candles again.
Yeah.
She earned it.
I think it's so interesting. Like, I mean, sure, Hollywood is small, but I think it's very interesting that Robin Wright auditioned for this role and went on later to play Kevin Spacey's wife in House of Cards. Yep. Which
was a Fincher.
Which Fincher produced on, right? Or wrote for?
I think he directed like the first couple episodes of that, too.
Yeah. I know he was involved with it.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, she would have been great, too. Mm-hmm. I think that could have
seen Yeah, Robin Wright's great, sure.
She's cool. She's a great actress, so, I mean, but also. So was Gwyneth Paltrow at the time.
True. My God, what was it? Christina Applegate would have broke my fucking heart if I would have seen that, because she's Kelly Bundy all the way to me. So, yeah, that would have sucked.
You know, I never really watched Married with Children as a kid, but, like, I started watching it, like, in my 20s, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And, fuck, dude, what a great fucking show.
Oh, Jesus. Absolutely. That was ahead of its time, for sure.
Married with Children, good God. When did that come out, like, late 80s, early 90s?
Yeah, it was right before The Simpsons. So it actually, it made the way for The Simpsons, for sure.
Yeah. Great we fucking show.
We talked about it on one of our Treehouse of Horror episodes, I think.
We did.
We did a history of The Simpsons at some point, but...
Mm-hmm. And we went into that Fox era, for sure. Yeah, that was a fun one. Come back.
Yeah, we'll great, see. Great fucking show. I kind of want to do a rewatch. I've only seen that series once in my life, and
really oh man, it was, show. Syndication was yeah. on all the time. Oof. But yeah, Kelly Bundy, and then of course Veronica Corningstone as well. So you know,
yeah, Veronica Corningstone.
That's right. That's right.
You're a dirty pirate hooker.
Very different the movie than Seven for sure.
Much different. Much different.
Well, for the part of John Doe, Fincher and Walker originally wanted Ned Beatty because he had a resemblance to a composite sketch of the Zodiac Killer. Interesting. Mm. Is that how you say his name? Beatty? Beatty?
Beatty.
Beatty, right? Okay, Ned Beatty. A little foreshadowing nod to Fincher later making the fan favorite Zodiac, which is, again, great movie. And of course, mm-hmm. Beatty declined the role and described the script to be, quote, the most evil thing I've ever read, end quote. Dude.
Yeah.
Sound like a real candle right there. Anyways, after Val Kilmer rejected the role, Brad Pitt pitched Fincher to go with Kevin Spacey. But the studio rejected because Spacey's asking price was too goddamn high for them. But ultimately, Fincher and the studio went with the unknown actor, and it was just not working well for everyone. This caused the studio to negotiate with Spacey and eventually offered him the role. Oh, so it was a Marty McFly situation right there, huh?
Pretty much. Pretty much.
No. Kevin Spacey.
There's I was trying to look for actual stills of like the unknown actor on set and stuff. I couldn't find any, but I did find like newspaper articles of like the actor's name. Starring mm-hmm. alongside Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman in the next like thriller or something like that, and then I was like, "Oh, okay, cool." So, yeah, he's still an unknown actor.
Like, oh, so he was just like a guy.
I don't think his career maybe he's done a lot of TV and stuff like that since then. But like, yeah.
So actually, it was the reason why you saw it on the poster was actually Eric Stoltz's pseudonym right there.
There you go. There you go.
Eric Stoltz did it. I did it again. Yeah.
Actually, guys, it was Christopher Walken. Now do it, Mills. Become Wrath, baby. Come on, do it. You can do it. I envy you so much, Mills. You make me jealous, baby. Come on. Arnold Schwarzenegger, who is John Doe. Mm. He's like, detective. Detective!
Come, I was waiting. Do it now. Come on.
Come on. Do it. Do it now. Become Wrath. Do it.
Oh, my.
Do it now.
Oh, shit. Sylvester Stallone. Now.
Okay. Mills, come on. Just do it, man. You gotta hit me with a boom. Become Wrath, you know?
Oh, okay.
Detective!
it's been a while since we all recorded together, so you know I'm having too much fun here.
Denzel Washington. Now, Mills, you got to do it right now. When I say you got to kill me right now, so that way you can become Wrath, baby. You understand? No. Boom! One shot will set you free, baby. Come on.
Damn, Denzel would have been good. Denzel would have been good.
Yeah, I can kind of see it actually.
Yeah, me too. And it definitely would have been a different vibe. But
have you guys ever seen Devil in a Blue Dress? Which I think we're gonna mention in just a little bit with Denzel Washington.
No,
came out around the same time, dude. Great fucking movie. Currently on the Criterion Collection. Great fucking movie. Okay. That's where you see a lot of more of the lot of good stuff from Denzel right there. But anyways,
okay, all right, interesting. Mm-hmm. All right, well, fucking A, back at it. Now, Kevin Spacey wanted his name to be omitted from the marketing for Seven. Quote, if I'm the third billed actor in a movie where the top two billing are trying to find somebody and they don't find that somebody until the last reel, then it's obvious who that someone is. I felt very strongly that it was the right thing to do for the movie. We finally won because it was a deal breaker. I was either going to be on a plane to shoot the movie or I wasn't.
Yeah, dude. So smart. It's crazy. He was literally casted days before he was on set. Like, he was like casted on Friday and he was on set on Tuesday. Like, it was insane because like they were already filming and they were working with this unknown actor to be John Doe. And then so like when this unknown actor was just not working, the studio was like, dude, okay, let's talk to Kevin Spacey for a little bit. Let's see how much it will. And then Spacey was already, his career was already taking off at the time. And he was just like, and he came up with this idea where he's just like, look, I got these two other movies coming out soon. And he even like kind of called his career. He's like, my career is going to go through a change. Like, Like, he was basically saying, I'm kind of going to blow up in, like, this year. Mm. And, he's like, I don't want to spoil the surprise. Like, I don't want my name to be involved in it. Like, I kind of want to keep... Like, he was kind of dedicated to this character to the point where he's like, I just want to, like, yeah. He's just like, I don't want my name in the billing as in honor of this fucking story.
That makes total sense, because in the ending credits, there's a specific title card just for Kevin Spacey as John Doe. That makes total sense. I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was actually pretty smart. And then he got on the wrong plane and got lost in New York, and the studio was like, Kevin!
Really?
I had to. I was just like, there's something going in there.
He's going down the Plaza Hotel. He's like, excuse me, where's the lobby?
No.
Down the hall and to the left.
I knew it. I was like, how are we going to shoehorn Donald Trump from Home Alone 2 Lost in New York?
You got to go down the hall to the left. Don't pay no attention to those illegal immigrants over there. And I see Kamala. Dirty Kamala. Don't avoid her, too.
Dude. Oh.
Crooked Hillary. Sleepy Joe. He's there, too. Just avoid everybody. Just down the hall to the left.
Yeah, go meet my buddy Epstein over there.
oh, he's your buddy too. Oh, we have the same mutual friend, Kevin. Very nice to meet you. I'm Donald Trump. Anyways, the lobby's down the hall to the left.
Kevin having to meet Epstein. Oh my God.
Hey, we don't know.
Oh. Okay. Wow. This is a fun little side there. Anyways.
Was it fun? Was it?
I didn't realize it would get that deep.
I know, right?
Seventh principal photography took place entirely in downtown Los Angeles. Fincher wanted the city to feel like all that jazz, the sounds of the lambs, and the French Connection rolled into one.
Well, I don't know about the success of that. It does feel like fucking Gotham.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I thought I had missed it at one point. I was like, wait, what fucking city are they in?
Cause I was thinking that too. I was like, is this Eddie City, USA? What the fuck?
I was like, at first I thought it was Chicago, and then I thought it was New York City, and then I realized, and then Ruben and I were like, what city is this? And then we realized that it was intentionally unnamed.
Save this. Oh, yeah. Save all this energy for the fun questions, dude.
Oh, okay.
Ooh, okay. All right.
Save all this energy right here for the fun questions.
Okay.
Mm. Now, speaking of Silence of the Lambs, Fincher hired composer Howard Shore after hearing his work in Silence of the Lambs. Originally, Howard Shore had a piece called The Last 7 Days for the film's opening credits. Fincher wasn't a fan of how upbeat it was, so he replaced the opening credits with music remixed with the version of Closer by Nine Inch Nails, which felt Fincher as fuck. I will say that.
Imagine my fucking surprise, because I haven't seen this movie in, I think I saw it once 10 years ago. And I loved it, but I had never rewatched it for reasons we'll get into in the discussion. But I was just like, this sounds suspiciously like Closer.
Oh, there you go.
And yeah. I was like, oh, it has the same like industrial like synth beat as Closer, and then at the end you just get like the very fading voice of Trent Reznor going, you bring me closer to God, and then it cuts to the movie, and I was like, okay, so it was Closer. All right.
Very good. Interesting that we hear Trent Reznor in Fincher movies again later on. He does the music for, like, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
He
also did the music for The Social Network.
Oh, that's
like,
funny.
Yeah, Trent Reznor and Fincher, they go way back, these guys.
That's crazy.
Yeah, good with the Fincher filmography, man. I forget how good it's solid his fucking resume
is. I am a fan of his career. I've been following his career for fucking decades, and I'm a Fincher fan, dude. I hear he's kind of a dick. But,
I believe that, actually. But,
yeah.
But yeah, dude, I'm a big fan. Have you guys ever watched The Game with Michael Douglas?
No.
Good God. I think this is his movie right after Seven. It's with Michael Douglas and Sean Penn. Probably one of my favorite films that I have in my Criterion collection. Like, it's so fucking fantastic. It's The Game. Please watch it. Listeners, if you have never seen The Game, please watch The Game. Holy shit. But anyways, yeah, Trent Reznor, yeah, he does a lot of music. I love his music in The Social Network. Fucking loved that a lot.
I talked about,
and I think
it also about when we were watching the movie, I was just like, I think this is the movie that gave David Fincher the hard-on he has for Brad Pitt, because he uses Brad Pitt the fucking time.
This is how they met. Yeah, this is where they actually met. There was a couple of actors up for the role for Mills, but like, basically he met Brad Pitt and he's like, oh, you freaking got the energy I'm looking for. And originally it was like, they wanted Mills to be like the same age as Somerset.
Oh, interesting.
And, and they're just like, no, let's make him like a younger hotshot, like, you know, hothead. And like Brad Pitt was already doing, he already did Legends of the Fall. He already did a whole, but he already had a couple movies under his belt too. Cool World. Oh my God. Cool World is fucking awesome.
Thelma and Louise. And,
Thelma and Louise. And, I think he already did 12 Monkeys at the time.
Oh,
yeah.
Shit, dude,
fucking, yeah. Fucking. Yeah. The dude was already coming up. But yeah, anyways, it's my turn again. Hey, yes. Reception. Let's talk about the Seven. All right. Seven was widely released in the US and Canada on September 22nd, 1995 to 2,441 theaters. Its opening weekend gross was over $14 million, making it the number one film of the weekend. Seven held on to that number one spot for 5 full fucking weeks, dude, passing up films like Halloween, The Curse of Michael Myers, To Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Neymar, Dead Presidents, and, just as I mentioned a couple minutes ago, Devil in a Blue Dress.
Hmm.
Yeah, 1995 had some bangers.
Yeah,
what a
especially Curse of Michael Myers,
oh,
dude.
No, I was gonna say, you mean To Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Julie Neymar? Because that movie fucks.
Yes, it does. I'm shocked you've seen it. Wow.
Of course I've seen it.
What
the that fuck? Movie does I'm gay.
Dude, have you seen Dog Day Afternoon? Didn't we talk about Dog
we
Day Afternoon?
Had this or was conversation.
That... Yes,
we have.
This was...
But
we
here's
have.
The thing. Wesley Snipes, John Leguizamo, and...
Was it Kurt Russell?
No.
Patrick Swayze
in drag is everything to me. This movie and Priscilla, Queen of the Desert are incredible.
Mm-hmm. I always remember John Leguizamo talks about that experience in his one-man show, Ghetto Clown. And it's perfect because
I've seen
that's
this,
an incredible
yeah.
title.
Ghetto Clown
yeah,
is an it's an
this.
Amazing,
I've
it's very
this.
Motivational, honestly.
He is so fucking good in that, man. John Leguizamo was fantastic in that piece.
He's good. And he talks about this. He's just like, all right, I had like a little diva thing going on with Swayze. He's like, so he has to make departments. He's like, all right, if you're going to drag me up, like, make me the baddest looking bitch possible. I want to
yeah.
fucking outshine
he
Swayze
looked,
in
he,
every
he did,
way.
Though. He did look like the baddest bitch. He fucking looked good.
Dude,
I was like, damn,
scene
John.
Where Patrick Swayze is like, ask that little Latin boy right, drag why he's crying.
If the boys heard me say that right now,
that's gonna lead the episode right there. That's
oh
be,
Jesus Christ!
He
dude.
Did look good.
Interesting.
He did look like the baddest bitch, dude. I was like, damn, John.
No, him in this and in your favorite director, Baz Luhrmann.
Oh, my God. Romeo and Juliet?
Romeo and Juliet. But that's his best movie, though.
So good.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. Anyways.
Better than The Curse of Michael Myers.
Hey, dude. Hey, I watch all gay movies, but I haven't watched the Dog Day Afternoon. Seven earned a total worldwide gross of $327.3 million. Critics like Roger Ebert praised Morgan Freeman. I love Webster's silence right now.
I could feel the stare. I can hear the stare in my heart right now.
Critics like Roger Ebert praised Morgan Freeman's scene-stealing performances. And have you seen Moonlight, Webster? No, just however, friend of the podcast, Owen Gleiberman, says that the ending is like an act of treachery against the viewer, undermining any hope for a positive outcome. Sure, dude.
Wow. Always getting it wrong, that Gleiberman.
That's your guys' boy, dude.
That's
every
your
time I,
boy.
Every I have no. You guys have been on this Gleiberman joke for way before
true.
I showed up
it's
here.
True.
And every time I cover an episode, I'm like, oh, there he is. I got to include him in this fucking outline.
Yeah, same.
All right, let's check out over on Rotten Tomatoes. Seven holds an 83% on the tomato meter with a 95% audience score. And Rotten Tomatoes consensus reads, quote,
a brutal, relentlessly grimy shocker with taut performances, slick gore effects, and a haunting finale.
All right, let's check out Letterboxd. 7 holds an average of 4.3 out of 5 based on over 1.8 million ratings.
Holy shit.
That's probably the highest I think I've ever seen in any Letterboxd.
That's holy fuck. Insane.
Yep.
Wow. And for that high rating, too.
That pulled me back into the episode. I was like silently fuming about queer movies that I have seen.
Oh, let's hear it, dude.
Portrait of a Lady on Fire.
Which one? No, actually, which ones have you not seen?
Which ones have I not seen?
Yeah.
I don't know, because there's so many. Like, I don't know.
There is.
Hey, listen, she's seen Born in Flames. She may as well have seen all of them, all right?
Your Own Private Idaho?
Yes.
I recommend that one.
I have seen that. I've seen Portrait of a Lady on Fire. I've seen Moonlight. I've seen The Birdcage. I've seen...
Birdcage is so fucking fantastic. Yeah. Birdcage.
Love Lies Bleeding. I've seen fucking...
She's like...
But I'm all
right, not related. I'm so sorry right now. Not related, but like, have you guys seen any recent films? Like, I don't know, these last like couple months.
Like
last month or so. I just saw The Substance. Not related to gay movies, but holy fuck, dude.
No,
I would love to make an episode on just that.
I would love to talk about it. We can definitely do a review episode of it. I want to see it this week because I've heard nothing but like good things and people saying it's like the horror movie of the year for them. Like, it's fucking yes,
it's fantastic.
Also, fuck you, I've seen Cruising. We talked about this.
Dog Day of
Cruising. I haven't seen Dog Day
Cruising. Cruising's good.
Yeah, I've seen another, Cruising,
another Pacino.
Yeah,
Pacino is the gayest man in New York City.
I've seen Boys Don't Cry. I've seen The Imitation.
Have you guys seen all right, fantastic, Webster. Have you guys seen Pacino's phone case, Shrek phone case? This is kind of going, it's kind of going all over the internet apparently. Yeah. But yeah,
his daughter gave it to him.
Yeah, he's like, oh, Shrek, my daughter gave me this, and oh, Shrek. Anyways, should we continue here?
Please.
Oh yeah, 1.8 million ratings. Okay, let's check out some fucking Letterboxd reviews. Yeah,
that's incredible. I need to Google highest. Or, I don't know, highest number of ratings on Letterboxd?
Highest Letterboxd ratings?
Highest amount Letterboxd of ratings?
Movies, Letterboxd movies with the highest ratings?
Most popular Letterboxd movies.
Sure. All right. While Webster pulls that up, we can hear clicking in the background.
Godfather She's Part going, 2.
Oh, wow. How much does that have?
Earned.
It has the highest... Yeah. That doesn't make sense.
It doesn't say?
Fucking AI just fucked me over. Oh no, because it's showing me the highest rated, not like total number of ratings.
Oh, how many people have rated?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, 7 is holding 1.8 million people have rated 7, dude. Mm. That's insane. Anyways, so Aaron with 5 stars says Kevin Spacey gives Brad Pitt head. No clickbait. Alright. Nice, Aaron. Hunter Strawberry with 4 stars says 7's ending scene is by far my favorite unboxing video on YouTube.
Good. Very good.
Bethany with 4.5 stars says great performances by Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman as Detective Mills and Detective Somerset, but damn, Kevin Spacey's performance as himself was the cherry on top, baby.
As himself.
That is good.
You know, as a pederast, as he would say in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Oh
mm-hmm.
my gosh.
MC with 4.5 stars says, so no head?
So, do you understand that reference?
Me?
Yeah.
I wouldn't understand it if I didn't put it there.
Oh, okay, I don't know. It was just a funny one-liner.
It's the fucking guy with the phone. He's like, so no head? And then he slams his phone.
I just wanted to make sure. You see, kids, back in the day, there was an app called Vine. And it was beautiful. Gosh. And they took it from us. That's all.
They sure did.
Lily with 4 stars says, crew member, so David, what are we going to do about the lighting for this scene? David Fincher, no.
That's really funny.
It's dark. Not by tone, but physically dark. Like it's
dark. Yeah, it's dark.
Can't see shit.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Allure with 5 stars. One of the best crime thrillers you'll ever see. Truly ahead of its time.
Bad pun.
And Snail Emoji with 4 stars says, Detective Mills, I'll give you head since your wife can't anymore.
Heart emoji.
Oh, boy.
That's really funny. Guys, we fucking did it. We have covered as much of Seven as humanly possible. But if we did any more, then we'll just start getting greedy and then slothy and then gluttonous and all that other jazz. But anyways, I want to hear what you guys think about Seven, dude. Let's hear your thoughts. Fuenserino.
Yeah, I'm with it. I'll go first. I fucking love this movie. I would always pop up like an HBO or some shit back in the day. So I don't remember seeing it when it came out, but I always remember it being on like when you hit the guide channel. Mm-hmm. And like, oh, I guess fucking Seven's on. And then one day I just gave it an honest watch. And you just hooked the whole way. This movie, like, is dark in every way possible. And I love it for that. As you can tell, it's like attack. Like, this is Fincher's soul right here. It's fucking phenomenal. Paced incredibly well. I was watching, because I started watching more film essays lately. And then YouTube just, you know, when you watch one, it keeps feeding you a bunch and a bunch. It talks about Fincher's like style, and how like he's somehow one of the only directors with Matt Reeves also who can make like a red camera look like film. And I'm like, oh, I can definitely see this one. I feel like wasn't digital yet, but you can see Fincher's style really establish itself this early on, and it's just captivating. Like, so, yeah, this movie's fucking brilliant. It was one of my first Netflix DVDs also. And even though I'd already seen it, I'm just like, well, it's not on the guide anymore, so I guess we're getting a 7 on the fucking DVD. yeah, I love it. I think it's hard to find a flaw, like, honestly. Like, it really is. Right. Kevin Spacey being in retrospect, obviously, but, you know, that's more of a personal thing. But, like, really, like, it's a 2-hour film that doesn't feel like 2 hours at all. And no, honestly, this is a fine sophomore effort from any kind of filmmaker. I think the best you can probably get. So those are my thoughts right there. What about you guys?
The Websterino 7.
Okay. So I have an interesting history with this movie. I saw it on my stepdad's DVD collection. Like, he had, like, just racks of DVDs, and I would go through them because what else am I going to do? And I was so entranced by this movie. I wanted to watch it so fucking bad. And my mom, who, you know, very protective over what I did and didn't consume as a child, was like, absolutely not. It is such a, like, it's such a fucked up movie. Absolutely not. And so this was like when I was like, I don't know, 12, 13 maybe. And so I go through the rest of my teenage years knowing that this movie is just dark and fucked up and I can't watch it. You'd think it was like 8mm the way my mom described it to me.
Which also, watch with my parents.
Not
the best one.
Are you serious?
No, we did. They rented it and they're like, oh, you're old enough, you can watch it. And then they were like, oh my God.
You know what's crazy? I've never seen 8mm. I'm going to put that on the list.
It's not great. It's not great.
I'm going to put that on the list to watch.
Maybe traumatized a little bit. But yeah, so you'd think the way my mom described it to me, it would be like a snuff film. It wasn't, spoiler alert. But so I go through the rest of my teenage years. I never watch it. I move out. I'm like looking for something to watch. I'm like, I love like detective movies and I like, you know, murder mysteries. Like I love like what Seven is, I enjoy. Like I love that dark kind of gritty shit. And so I was like, I'm going to watch it. How bad can it be? And I got to the end of it, and I was just like, really? Like, that's it? And I called my mom after I finished it, and I was like, why did you keep me from watching this movie until I literally had moved out? And she's like, honestly, I fucked up. I should have let you watch it. Because at the time, I was obsessed with Criminal Minds. I still am. But, like, I don't watch it as much because it fucks up my brain space. But, like, as a teenager, I religiously watched Criminal Minds. Which, for those of you who haven't seen Criminal Minds, it is the most creative serial killer shit I've ever seen.
Oh, absolutely.
And so she's like, honestly, the fact that you watch Criminal Minds, you totally could have watched Seven and it would have been fine. And I was like, God damn it.
You see, parents out there, don't prevent your kids from watching cinema. Like, why? That's more of a heinous crime than the crimes you see in Seven.
I don't know if that's true, but but yeah, so that was my experience watching Seven. So I watched it and I was like, I've seen weirder shit, and like I kind of like I appreciated it for what it was, but then I was just like, all right, moving on. Rewatching it today,
was this viewing number two?
Yes.
For you? Oh, okay, cool.
I fucking loved it. It was like, yeah, it was dark, but both literally and figuratively. But I had such a good time with it. The characters felt they had depth, and they were fleshed out, and they were interesting, and the story was fascinating, and it was just graphic enough to leave enough to my imagination, but not everything. this is a great time. I had a wonderful time watching this.
I love hearing that. Nice. That's awesome. Nice. That's fantastic. For me, I mean, I love this movie. As I mentioned earlier, to me, this movie's like a monumental hit. But like my history with the movie is like, I didn't watch it until teenagehood. I think I was like somewhere like a sophomore or junior in high school. We were talking about like detective movies. I had already seen Silence of the Lambs around this time. Mm-hmm. And so like my video production teacher was all like, oh, let's name some detective movies. I tried watching a crime thriller this week. And I was like, oh, Mr. Miller, I just watched Silence of the Lambs. And he's like, oh, I love that one. He's like, but I think I love Seven a little bit more. And I'm like, which one's Seven? Is that the one with Brad Pitt? He's like, yeah. I was like, oh, I've never seen that one. At the time, Seven must have been like 10 years old, maybe 12 mm-hmm. years old or something like that. And so it was already like, it already had like some age already in there. But it was like, oh, I've never seen it. So like a buddy of mine, he's like, oh, I have it on DVD. I'll let you borrow it. And I'm like, cool. He brought it in. Watched it over on the weekend. Loved it. And I was like, Mr. Miller, I was like, dude, I fucking love Seven. But at the time, I was like, I think I still like Silence of the Lambs a little bit more. And he's like, well, Phil, I'll give you this. Silence of the Lambs had Anthony Hopkins, blah, 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 blah. And then Mr. Miller, I don't know if he's still with us. He must have been like in his mid-60s at the time. This is like almost 20 years ago.
Yeah,
cool. Wow. So we had like a little mini debate. I was like, look, dude, I love Seven, but I just watched it, but I just think Silence of the Lambs is... But now, fast forward now, I'm like, dude, I mean, as detective films, like crime thriller films, like, you know, with murder mystery and stuff like that.
Your favorite's the Batman.
It's the Batman, of course. Dude. Jorge Maria. Anyways, dude, which is heavily inspired by Seven. Oh, I mean, yeah. Look at the Batman.
Yeah.
It was named as like, even Matt Reeves went on record. It was like, oh yeah, this is like a nod to David Fincher's Seven. This movie Seven is, it's a phenomenal piece of work. It's art. It makes me feel so many things. It's crafted. To me, it's timeless. Dude, like sometimes I even forget that this movie came out almost 30 years ago.
Yeah.
It just doesn't even feel like it.
I only feel the age when they're using pagers. Other than that, it pretty seamlessly, you know. Ages.
Yeah, honestly, it really does, and it's fantastic. It's beautiful craftsmanship by David Fincher, from everything from the script to cinematography. Cinematography is just I just think Fincher's known for having very picky cinematography. Like he's kind of like a Kubrick, where he does like so many fucking takes per scene, and like so. I just kind of, if you follow his filmography, you'll notice that his cinematography is very similar to what you see in Seven. I think he found his visual tone in Seven, because you see a lot of lamps and a lot of dark colors and a lot of specific David Fincher look, aesthetic, if you want to use that word, in his following films like Seven and The Social Network, and especially Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. And Zodiac too. Like you see all these movies, and it's like it has that David Fincher look. He's got a specific, and I think he found that tone with Seven, his visual tone, I should say. And it's Seven. You know, it's fucking. When it comes to people
talking about this, I've never met that one person who does not like this movie, and it's not even like a matter of taste. It's just like, it's just facts, baby.
It's honestly just like a very interesting movie. Like, even if you're not like a big, like, quote unquote movie person, or you're not a big horror person, like, it's just like a very entrancing story.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just one of those things. I actually showed this to my parents like recently. I want to say it was during the pandemic, probably, maybe like Halloween 2020, maybe 2021. My dad knew of it. He's never seen it though. And then the same with my mom. It's like, oh, I remember seeing the previews for this back in the 90s. We watched it and they were so like locked in. They were just like, oh shit, what's going to happen? Blah, 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 blah. My dad loves Morgan Freeman, but he's never seen Seven. And then so like I showed it to them just a few years ago and they're just like, oh fuck. I've never seen them so locked in a movie.
Oh, I love that feeling when the parents are just like in it.
Yep. So yeah, sounds like we all love it. Okay, yeah. So let's move on to some fun questions here. I came up with some fun ones here. So we discussed other directors who were being eyed for Seven. We mentioned Guillermo del Toro and a couple others. If David Fincher never directed this, who would have you liked to see in the director's chair?
Oh god,
of this era.
Let's make it fun. Let's make it anyone right now. Whether anyone of right that now? Era, you can go with fucking. You can go with fucking Ari Aster if we want. I
was thinking Ari Aster, well, but I think that's a little too obvious.
Yeah, we were talking about it earlier. Honestly, the Silence of the Lambs comparison, Jonathan Demme, his version of this would have been interesting. Mm-hmm. Probably a little too similar to Silence of the Lambs, but neither here nor there.
I got one. Mm-hmm. I got one. Darren Aronofsky's Seven.
Oh, great choice. Oh, I would have loved to have seen that.
That would have been pretty fucked up still. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Something tells me that the Safdie brothers would have done something interesting with this.
They would have done something
good. You mentioned Guillermo del Toro earlier as a potential director. And
he was being eyed for sure.
I love Guillermo del Toro. So I would like to see that. I think that would be a good one.
That'd be a good one. I agree. David Cronenberg, fuck it. Let's make it as gruesome. No, because that may be a bit too much, actually.
You probably would have gone overboard, huh?
You know, Brian De Palma. He would have been much more of a detective.
Oh, Brian De Palma.
A more detective movie would have been interesting.
Yeah.
Cool, dude. Brian De Palma's gay, right, Webster?
Motherfucker.
Have you seen his movies?
You know, not all.
Have you seen Scarface, dude?
Not all gay people know all the other gay people, dude. Don't be a fucking bigot.
I don't know. I'm just going by what you said. I'm gay. I've seen these movies.
Phil is a fucking bigot. You heard it here first. Yeah.
I'm just going with the logic. I'm just going with the logic that you use in that. I'm gay. I've seen this movie.
I can say that.
I was just going based off
like
that
how
logic.
We say Mexican jokes, Phil. It's how she says gay jokes, and you get to do both. So,
oh, that's hilarious. Anyways, okay, that's cool. That's cool. All right, I like your guys' picks. This is good stuff here. So, there are some film theories that Seven is actually set in Gotham City. I've watched some YouTube videos on this, and so many people are convinced that this is legit Gotham City. And there's film theories that Seven is set in Gotham City years before Bruce Wayne was even born. So Seven even went as far as inspiring, as mentioned before, future Batman films like The Batman that came out in 2022. Let's have some fun with this one. Pitch me a Gotham film with Mills and Somerset.
Ooh, I have mine.
Just give me like two lines. Let's make it short and sweet.
Okay, so it's the same.
Or if you want to go all out, you can do that too.
What's gonna happen is they're gonna be called to this horrifying scene of the crime. Like, what happened? Like, oh, there's so many bodies. And they go over, and they're like, well, these people look like henchmen. And they're all frozen. What's going on? Yeah, and they start trying to thaw them. They realize like they're just dying in there. And they go, what happened? What happened? Well, all these fucking diamonds got stolen. Some broad sleeping in the fucking thing. Like, you know, Mills is just going all just like, dude, I lost my wife. I can fucking I totally understand his fucking motivation right there. Oh, and it's great because what's actually happening is they are in following the exact crimes, and it gets more absurd from Every crime scene in Batman and Robin. Every single one.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and at the same time, Uma Thurman's Poison Ivy is trying to gaslight Mills to kind of throw the scent off the trail. So the exact same rubber lip scene happens.
Everything. Wow.
And they get beat to the chase, but they will be the detectives that ultimately lock them up in Arkham. And then they're like, you know, to really settle this, we got to put them both in the same cell. And then the movie ends with the scene of Ivy.
The Peanut Gallery has a question.
What?
The Peanut Gallery requests, are Mills and Somerset playing it as serious as they do in Seven?
They're absolutely playing it as serious.
They have to be their characters.
They have
in this.
Like they're playing it as seriously. That's they could be so Mills. Fucking funny.
Yeah. So if Webster, if you need time, I kind of just came up with mine.
Honestly, you guys could just get me. I have fucking nothing.
All right, I was gonna say this. Okay, Mills and Somerset, they start getting riddles sent to the police station. And it's not Paul Dano Riddler, baby. This is Jim Carrey, Joel Schumacher as the Riddler, sending them riddles. And he's killing off not just innocent people, dude. He's killing off villains, dude. He's killing off villains, too, dude. It starts off with the gluttony villain and the overly person, the big person who ate until his stomach burst.
Mm-hmm.
That's Danny DeVito's Penguin. I'm sorry. R.I.P. R.I.P. I'm sorry. And then, so the person... And then the model who ended up committing suicide, unfortunately, that was Poison Ivy in Joel Schumacher's Batman and Robin.
Uma, no.
Yeah, dude. And then we find some folks, including Mr. Freeze, locked up in a frozen thing. But Mr. Freeze has been, like, brutally David Fincher. Let's just say he was he was the victim of the bladed strap-on.
Oh my god.
Yes, Mr. Freeze. Yeah, he was found.
What a death for your boy.
I know.
You played Mr. Freeze in our Batman Returns episode, Phil.
I know. Mr. Freeze is so fucking... Oh, right now, because it's spooky season? Or, you know what? I don't know why. It's not even a spooky film, but Batman Sub-Zero is a great movie to watch around this time. Maybe even winter. I would say the winter for sure, but definitely watch that one.
Well, as we know, Batman Returns is a Christmas movie.
Christmas movie. It is a Christmas movie. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Never let anyone tell you different.
I never will.
And so, of course, like, Mills and Somerset are just like, well, we got to find out who's killing all these victims. And then Mills is married to Nicole Kidman from Batman Forever. And
he finally got one. He's like,
Let's just say that Mills gets another boxed delivery. and it's Nicole Kidman inside that box. Yeah. I'm sorry. It is dark. It is a very dark, but we still have this is a dark
take on...
The box
has question marks on it, right? So see, it's
yes,
fun still.
Of course. Yeah, absolutely. But it's all Jim Carrey's twisted, demented mind here doing all this.
He's extra fucked up in this.
Yeah. So anyways, all right, Webster, if you got nothing, that's totally fine. We can go to the next fun question.
My only thing that I got is the whole movie is exactly the same except for Zoe Kravitz's Catwoman is Mills' wife. And there's a witty... clippy one-liner at the end where her head actually isn't in a box and there's a Nine Lives joke somewhere. That's all I got.
Is anybody by any chance watching The Penguin right now?
I haven't. No. I used to have spoken very highly of it. Mm-hmm. I've heard good things. I just haven't gotten around to it yet.
It is fucking... I'm trying to put my Batman bias aside, but it is fucking good. It is good TV.
Okay.
God damn. I don't know if you guys remember in Batman Begins when Michael Caine's Alfred's like, what would you call that? And he points to the TV, and then Christian Bale's Bruce Wayne goes, damn good television.
Oh.
That's exactly how I feel right now. That's damn good television. The Penguin is really fucking good. Everybody in this, from Colin Farrell to the woman who plays Sofia Falcone, they're so on fucking point with this.
Yeah, I've seen a couple thirst posts about her. Mm-hmm.
Oh, trust. I think a new crush has been unlocked with her.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
She is all over IG.
Yeah, she... Yeah, thanks for pointing that out. I'm going to follow. Yeah, now that you mentioned it.
What's your next fun question,
Phil? So, next fun question. Here we go.
WrestleMania is set to be in Las Vegas, as we all know, right?
Yes.
Las Vegas is known as Sin City.
Oh my gosh.
Hmm. Wrestlers are getting murdered every day for 7 days straight. Detective Mills and Somerset are on the scene to investigate, of course, who are the seven murdered wrestlers and who is John Doe? This can be new and legendary wrestlers. Do you guys have need some time with this one?
So wait, do they have to correlate to the sins?
No.
Mine are absolutely going to do it.
All right, sure.
Mine 100%
are.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, if you want to, go ahead. By all means, yes.
Agreed. Ted DiBiase, the $1 million man. 100 fucking percent.
Oh, that's so good.
Good. I have a different choice for greed. Should we go 1-to-1?
Let's do it. Greed. Okay. What's greed?
Go for it. Triple H.
Oh, nice. All right. What about you, Phil? Do you got anybody for greed?
For greed, I was... God damn, dude. That fucking... Ted DiBiase. Ted DiBiase. It's perfect.
That was my second choice.
The $1 million man? That is perfect.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Oh, my God. Dude, I was going to... Paul Heyman, but that's not even as good as $1 million man.
It's okay. Dude, it's, Paul Heyman's a good choice,
too.
Yeah.
All right, go for it.
Envy is Drew McIntyre.
Damn, that's really good.
I was thinking a la Montreal Screwjob, Shawn Michaels.
Okay, get some Envy in there. All right.
Yeah.
Envy, I would say Eric Bischoff.
Okay, I like that too. Damn. Lust is definitely...
Goldust.
Oh, shit, that's better.
I was going so traditional and surprising no one, Rhea Ripley.
I was actually going to go Lita during her Edge era.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, Goldust is fucking brilliant.
Goldust, I mean, yeah, dude.
Yeah. Right. Gluttony is Yokozuna for me.
Gluttony is... I haven't even thought of these answers, too, so I'm going with you guys on this.
I put Batista.
Gluttony.
Go Gluttony for Batista?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, shit. All right.
Gluttony. Let's go with...
I don't know these people, but I'm like, Rikishi. I feel bad putting them for anything.
Rikishi. There you go. Rikishi's...
Okay.
Mm-hmm. He's a little bit of a glutton. For Sloth, let's see.
This is the one that I pulled the blank on. I have no idea. Those men are all and women are so active.
He never wants to put anybody over, I'm going to have to go with Hulk Hogan, brother.
Okay.
I was going to say somebody that was affiliated with like steroids and stuff like that. What about Psycho Sid?
Oh, for Sloth?
I don't know. No,
yeah, see, the Sloth is difficult.
Yeah, I was just going with laziness for mine. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go... Shit, dude. Damn, that's a good question. I'm going Psycho Sid. Okay. I'm going to go Psycho Sid.
I'm going to pass. I don't love my... Because I have a pick, but nothing really fits. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
For Wrath... Oh,
what's next?
Mm-hmm. I put Chris Benoit.
Oh my God, Webster. Holy fuck. I don't think any of us can top that one, dude. I was going to go
Stone Cold, but you know what? I think that's a little more accurate.
I'm also going with Benoit for this one. Holy fuck, dude.
I'm so glad you guys hadn't thought of that.
That is really good. Holy shit.
Oh, boy.
Damn.
I don't even know.
Good stuff. Do we have one more?
Yeah. For last but not least, for Pride, I have Edge.
Ooh. Edge is good for Pride. Absolutely. Yeah. I would actually go...
Shawn Michaels. Rated R superstar, specifically.
Nice. Right. Shawn Michaels.
I'm going to go Shawn Michaels, too.
I'm going to go with The Rock.
The Rock is good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The Rock's good.
All of those are good options.
Also, I'm going to change my lust option. I'll give Lita a break. Everybody turned on her during that one, and that wasn't fair. Val Venus, for sure.
Mm. Oh, wow.
The big Valboski, baby.
The big Valboski. You know something, ladies? Thanksgiving is always a great time of the year. It's a time when we take our turkeys and we spread the legs and stuff it. Dude, that promo is legendary.
I love it. I put the Big Apple and I came and I saw and I came again.
Came again. That's a good one for Lust. Yeah.
That's a good one. Okay.
Those were good. All right. Who's John Doe?
John Doe's John Cena, please.
John Doe.
Because you don't see him for a while. All
right. Okay. Dude, I'm going to say right now, only because we're expecting a heel turn, Cody Rhodes. As John Doe.
Possibly.
Mm-hmm.
How about you, Webster? Yeah. John Doe.
I don't have one. I thought of everyone else, but I don't know. I like the John Cena angle.
Okay. Yeah. We'll double Cena. I'm down.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. All right, dudes. Well, that's all the fun questions and topics I have for 7. I hope you guys enjoyed it. But before we take off, before we wrap it up, let's give a nice, clean rating for 7 out of 5 Gwyneth Paltrow heads, or as this episode has been aiming for this whole time, 5 Gwyneth Paltrow pussy scented candles.
God, oh, shit. I'm going to have to go ahead and say it. This is a 100% 5 extremely full wine glasses.
Yeah.
It's 5 of them for me. I think this is one of those movies that they just pretty much perfect. There's nothing wrong with it.
It's kind of perfect, huh?
Yeah, I truly love it. I didn't realize how much I liked it until this recent showing. I think it'll stand the test of time for ages. Pure cinema.
Yeah.
5 out of 5.
Did you rewatch this, Phil, for the episode, or are you just going straight off the dome?
No, I rewatched it like...
straight off the dome.
When did I watch it? I want to say I watched it like Sunday or Friday, because we went to Sinespe on Saturday.
We did.
Mm-hmm. I think I watched it on Friday night.
Fuck it.
Yeah.
Okay. I was just curious. What?
But I do watch this movie like at least once a year.
But I mean, honestly, this is this is a very good fall vibes
movie. It is. Mm-hmm. It really is. Absolutely.
I will rate this. So I don't want to get caught up in like recency bias because I just watched it like in earnest as a fully formed adult today. I had a fucking blast. I feel comfortable giving it a 5 with the possibility of changing it, but I'm gonna give it 5 what's in the boxes.
Oh, wow.
There you go. Right. Yeah, dude, honestly, same here. I'm going 5 as well. It's been a 5 for so long. I mean, it's just one of those movies, it's just like, fuck, dude. I don't know. It's 7. It's a movie that's like, it's iconic, but like it's got every reason and it's earned his level of iconography for so long. It's one of those movies that does test the time. Yeah, for
stands the test of time.
Yep, mm-hmm. test. I can say words.
You got this.
Tongue twister.
You wrote this whole thing, and we just got through a lot of it. So
yeah,
precisely.
Yeah, so it's a 5 for me. I mean, it's an easy 5, dude. So yeah. That's it. Yeah, dude.
Cool. All right. Let's go ahead and call it here. Thank you guys so much for joining us. That was 7 from 1995. Next week, I don't know what we're talking about, but I won't be here.
we'll figure it out.
And we will figure it out. And I will be passing the reins to probably Anthony, and he will guide you on your on our Halloween pick for this year. So I'm gonna be on vacation in New York City. I'm sorry, in hit it, Phil?
New York City.
Hell yeah. But if you want to stay up to date on the latest and greatest of all of our podcasting shenanigans in the meantime, you can find us on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORRORBLE People's Podcast. You can find me on Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop. I'm also a co-host of Turning Tables Podcast here on the Horrible People's Network. I also frequently guest with Danny Gutierrez from last week's episode on Hops and Notes, another podcast here on the network. You can find Anthony on his gaming podcast on the network. It is npc.gaming.pod on Instagram. And you can find Phil on Instagram and YouTube at Phil Acevedo.
Yeah.
I think that's it. Thank you guys so much for listening. And in the meantime, if you get a box that is mislabeled, it could be, just maybe, one of Gwyneth Paltrow's pussy candles.
Thank Ooh. You. I was so glad you'd go with that one.
Yeah,
I was
like, absolutely.
Don't say head. Say candle.
Don't say no. Ooh. And also, as always watch out for Kevin Spacey. Always watch out for Kevin Spacey.
Be on the lookout. All right, bye, guys.
See ya.